Okay, so in terms of moving forward, in terms of trying to characterise the Bodhisattva ideal, I'd like to consider the question, what kind of person is a Bodhisattva? What is a Bodhisattva actually like? And I'd like to read you a little passage that describes that, actually. This passage comes from a text called the Vimalakirti Nidesha, or the Vimalakirti Sutra. And Vimalakirti is the main character in this text. He is a Bodhisattva, and this is how he's described. His wealth was inexhaustible for the purpose of sustaining the poor and the helpless. He observed a pure morality in order to protect the immoral. He maintained tolerance and self-control in order to reconcile beings who are angry, cruel, violent and brutal. He blazed with energy in order to inspire people who were lazy. He maintained concentration, mindfulness and meditation in order to sustain the mentally troubled. He attained decisive wisdom in order to sustain the foolish. He wore the white clothes of the layman, yet lived impeccably like a religious devotee. He lived at home, but remained aloof from the realm of desire, the realm of pure matter, and the immaterial realm. He had a son, a wife, and female attendants, yet always maintained continence. He appeared to be surrounded by servants, yet lived in solitude. He appeared to be adorned with ornaments, yet always was endowed with the auspicious signs and marks. He seemed to eat and drink, yet always took nourishment from the taste of meditation. He made his appearance at the fields of sports and in the casinos, but his aim was always to mature those people who were attached to games and gambling. He visited the fashionable heterodox teachers, yet always kept unswerving loyalty to the Buddha. He understood the mundane and transcendental sciences and esoteric practices, yet always took pleasure in the delights of the Dharma. He mixed in all crowds, yet was respected as foremost of all. So that's just a brief section that actually describes Vimalakirti. So he comes across as a pretty spectacular person. In a phrase that my teacher came up with, he is all things to all men and women. He's able to appear in whatever guise is the best guise in order to help other beings to communicate with beings. So maybe you got a sense from that description that he seems a bit unreal, or perhaps a bit super real or hyper real. Doesn't really seem like an ordinary person at all, or like someone who one might meet. So he appears in the guise of an ordinary person, but actually there's something extraordinary about him. There's maybe even something transcendent about him. And this is very much how the Bodhisattva is presented and described in Mahayana texts. Even where they appear as a relatively normal being, in their essence, in their depths, there's something extraordinary, something transcendent. And this becomes still more emphasized when we go on to examine what are called cosmic bodhisattvas, which I'll return to a little bit later. Okay, so we could say, or I would say, that Vimalakirti is the epitome of the Mahayana ideal. He epitomizes the Bodhisattva ideal. He is all of the qualities of the Bodhisattva rolled up into one. So I just want to go on and maybe characterize some of those qualities just in a little bit more detail, just pick out one or two of them. So most notably in Mahayana texts, the Bodhisattva is characterized by their compassion for all beings. And their compassion for beings is so intense, so acute, that despite the suffering that they might experience by being born again and again in a world of suffering, they're willing to undertake this, they're willing to do this in order to benefit other beings. That's how great their compassion is. So they're willing to be reborn not only in this world, but in many worlds, in any world, in order to benefit beings. That is how compassionate they are. So they don't want to simply gain awakening for themselves. They don't want simply release from their own suffering. They somehow, they themselves will continue to suffer until all beings have been relieved from all sufferings. So essentially the Bodhisattva is committed to an infinite process of awakening, one which has no discernible end, because according to Buddhist cosmology, there's an infinite number of universes and an infinite number of beings. So to awaken all of those beings will take, we could say, an infinite amount of time. But the Bodhisattva is willing to do that, willing to embark on that process, commit themselves to that process of cosmic awakening. So the Bodhisattva lives out his or her life, or understands his or her spiritual perspective, spiritual path, not just in the context of one life, not just in the context of this life, and not just in the context of themselves. They understand their spiritual path in the context of all beings, and in the context of all time, and in the context of all universes. In short, in a cosmic context. They understand what they're doing in terms of its cosmic significance, its cosmic resonance. And I think the way that I've described it in terms of this cosmic context, well, for me at least, it starts to become just a little bit daunting. It just seems rather a tall order to accomplish, you know, the awakening of all beings in all universes for all time. I mean, you know, I struggle to get out of bed in the morning sometimes, never mind saving all sentient beings. And I think this is a very real issue, the fact that it would appear that on one level, the Bodhisattva ideal is just incredibly cosmic, and maybe so cosmic as to seem remote, as to almost become irrelevant. Because, well, how could any of us, you know, with our mundane lives, with our kind of day-to-day concerns, with our bills to pay and jobs to go to, how could we commit ourselves to saving all sentient beings for all time? It seems, in a sense, a little bit ridiculous, maybe. And I think that maybe this starts to raise a serious question about how this vision, how this ideal should be understood, whether it really should be understood as something that in concrete terms, in practical terms, we would actually fulfill, or whether rather it's more a mythic context, we could say, a visionary universe within which we understand our day-to-day lives. So day-to-day, we may be going about our ordinary lives, we may be going to the shops, taking the car to get serviced, and so on. We may be supervising somebody's dissertation, which is something I did a few weeks ago. And we may think, this is all very, very mundane, and in some sense it is. But what the Mahayana brings to that apparently mundane conduct is a larger universe of meaning, is a broader context of significance and understanding. So even while the things that we do on a local level, on a day-to-day level, may be very small and very insignificant, they reverberate across the entire cosmos. So if you could imagine maybe everything that you do, if you imagine that everything that you did was amplified, let's just say, 1,000 times. So every time you shouted at somebody, that was amplified 1,000 times. Or every time you opened the door for somebody to go through rather than pushing through yourself, that was amplified 1,000 times. This is kind of how the Mahayana vision works. It gets us to understand the quality of our actions by placing them in a broader context, a more universal context, by amplifying their apparent consequences. So we might often think, well, what's the point of doing our small tiny little bit of good because there's so much going on that's not so good, it won't really make any difference, nobody will notice. And in the short term, and maybe in our immediate circle, that may be true. But in Mahayana terms, this little seed we've sown is maybe growing in different universes across the whole cosmos, and maybe a being who hasn't been born yet, maybe a being that's going to be born in 10,000 lifetimes, will be influenced or be informed by that one little bit of goodness that we acted out. So this is kind of how the Mahayana vision works. We've got our more or less ordinary lives, but that life is understood within a visionary or mythic context, the context of the Bodhisattva ideal.